Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to, but they happen to be my views. And, of course, the first hour is going to be Open Line Wednesday. So you have a chance to participate if you'd like. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 464-8295. I just want to give you a few examples of the things that really disturb me. Immediately after the Vietnam War, many of our servicemen were coming home and complaining about the effects of Agent Orange, and many of them had children that were defective, and a large number of the children born in Vietnam were defective, and large areas of Vietnam today are still, they can't grow any crops in the area because the soil has 100 times the level of dioxin in it, and nothing will grow there. Dioxin, of course, you remember, was the Agent Orange that they sprayed on the foliage there to kill the foliage so that they could see the enemy. They couldn't hide in the forest there. And it was a very effective means, of course, defoliating everything so there'd be no coverage, nothing to hide in. But it also has a profound impact on our own troops. In fact, Admiral Sumwalt eventually, when his son developed cancer because of the Agent Orange, came forward and wrote extensively about this. And although the government to this day says that Agent Orange is nothing wrong with it, why, they, of course, give the veterans special benefits for Agent Orange. If you read the Veterans Administration statistics, which we have, you will find that they have special areas where they analyze the tragic consequences of the use of Agent Orange on American troops. When President Bush was recently over in Vietnam, they talked about Agent Orange, and the America agreed to give a few million dollars to help the families of the children that were incapacitated by the genetic effects of Agent Orange. And in fact, we're even talking about helping Vietnam clean up the areas there. Of course, Vietnam doesn't have the money to clean up the areas that were destroyed because of the toxic effect of Agent Orange, but we do, and we're talking about providing the money for Vietnam to do a massive cleanup, to remove the soil and replace it with good soil so that the farmers can use their land, which has been destroyed. It was destroyed almost 40 years ago as a result of what happened there. Let's see, that would be 1965, about 40 years ago, through 74, when we were using the Agent Orange. But the government has lied to the American people about it. There's no question that they've lied, and they are still lying to the American people. And when the government lies to the people, can we trust anything that they say? And you go back and you see our point is that the evil and wicked people have gained control of our government and have been working within our government for many years because they have a different loyalty than you and I do. They're not loyal to the truth. They're loyal to the fact that they want a world government. They want to destroy Christianity. They are using the military and financial power of our nation to accomplish just that. And unfortunately, the average individual doesn't understand that there have always been two forces at work in America. One was the Christian, the wholesome, the good, the worthwhile, the noble, and the other was evil and underhanded and dark, and of course, certainly dishonest. And these forces have been in conflict, just as they were in the Garden of Eden. The same battle is taking place here today, and we're going to talk more about that. If you don't call in, of course, it's Open Line Wednesday. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if there's something you'd like to talk about. Otherwise, you're going to hear an hour-long monologue right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, we're talking about this tragic situation where the government has been lying to us about Agent Orange, but it's lying to us about so many things. It's telling us that fluoride is perfectly safe, and it isn't. And those of you who've heard our discussions on fluoride realize, of course, that what they're really doing is targeting the blacks. Of course, they're hurting the whites as well. In the areas where they have fluoridated water, about 91% of those areas, they use a hydrofluorosilicic acid. They don't use fluoride. They use a hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a very toxic substance that's got out of the scrubbers, chimneys where they make phosphate fertilizers. And, of course, when this is put into the water, what it does is it doubles the lead level in the blood of children. And this has been a study with 450,000 children. And it's the largest study I've ever done. And when they analyzed the blood levels the level of lead in the blood of children, why it doubles in those areas with fluoridated water. Not only that, but it doubles in the white. It goes up four times in the Hispanic and six times in the black. And, of course, one of the problems with there's no safe level of lead in the blood, because it goes to the brain and it does damage to the brain, and it results in not only mental deficiency but rage and actually criminal activity. And this, I believe, is one reason why today in America, one in three young black men is either in prison, probation, or parole. And this story that I'm talking about is well known, at least among the elite. They understand what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand. Of course, if you want documentation on these things we talked to you about, we'd be glad to get it. Dr. David Kennedy covers that very, very well. In the recent programs we've done with him, he's put out a great DVD. It's called Let the Truth Be Told. Let the Truth Be Told. Now, it doesn't actually mention what I just told you about the blood levels of lead, but we can get to the documentation on that if you want to, or let me suggest that you seriously consider getting the interviews, the taped interviews I've done with Dr. Kennedy recently. And you have to understand we're doing irreparable harm to the brains of our own children and the Hispanic children, but specifically to the black children, because there is a racist agenda behind these wicked people, because many of them, of course, are disciples of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and the Lucis Trust and the new group of world servers, and because they worship a different God. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Line Wednesday, and we've got Herb calling. Is that Tulsa, Oklahoma?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment of what you'd like to talk about? A
couple of comments. In the last few weeks I've heard on the radio, it might have been on Alex Jones, I'm not sure, that Russia was extending and updating their SS 18 ICBM.
Right, so, that's right.
Yeah, now, I think we've gotten far too lax with Russia in the last few years.
No, yeah, but Herb, you don't understand. We have built up Russia's nuclear capacity. We've given them the technology. We are unilaterally disarming while Russia is increasing their and updating their weapons. We've done away with all of our MX missiles, 100 MX missiles. You know, why would we be unilaterally disarming when the Russians are increasing their ability for a nuclear first strike? Why would we, doing everything we could to block an effective anti-ballistic missile system here in America, where they already have an effective ballistic missile system over in Russia? It doesn't make sense unless you understand that nothing makes sense, unless, of course, we are preparing to go into World War III.
Oh, yeah. The second comment was that I understand that in Mexico they're rioting quite a bit all over the place right now because of what they perceive as the unfair elections.
You're absolutely right. In fact, Mexico's on the verge of civil war. The man who lost the election has actually declared himself the winner of the election, and he's setting up a parallel government. And the information that I get out of Mexico is that we're on the verge of a civil war down there. When that happens, of course, you think we've had a lot of people coming across the border before? You just wait a little while. They'll be streaming across here. But you see, that's all part of the plan. And, of course, I believe that they did steal the election down there. I don't believe that they wanted the leftist there, because he wouldn't have gone along with their plan, the globalist plan to unite Mexico, the United States, and Canada, this so-called Security and Prosperity Partnership. He wouldn't have gone along with that, so they just stole the election.
Yes, well, okay, those were the two comments I wanted to bring up this evening.
All right, fine. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right, fine. Well, it's good to hear from you. Have you been listening along, Herb? Have you called before?
No, I haven't, but I've been listening for quite a while now.
Well, I appreciate that. And please get everybody there in Tulsa listening. We just need to get people thinking and questioning and understand that behind what's going on today are powerful spiritual forces which are plunging America, indeed the whole world, into World War III.
Yes.
Okay. God bless. Thank you. Well, we've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call if you have a question, something you'd like to talk about. Hey, Ray, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I have a question, actually. Now, the John Warner Act, the so-called act that they snuck through, I guess Congress put it through, didn't they?
They did, right.
Does that... Now, I understand that the states have the right to call in the National Guard. At least in the past, they've always had the right to call in the National Guard. It wasn't under the federal government to... And now, under this act, apparently, the executive now takes charge of the National Guard and calling it into in a situation. So it's kind of scary, because with the federal government in charge of the National Guard, solely in charge of the National Guard, how can the states, it's always been the states that have been called in the National Guard, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But you have to understand that there are people who want a dictatorship in America. And these two pieces of legislation, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act, these are the blueprint for a dictatorship. In fact, Senator Patrick Leahy, apparently he's from Vermont, had actually said, this encourages the president to declare martial law. Now, basically what they have done with the John Warner Act is, first of all, they've repealed Posse Comitatus. Posse Comitatus had been put in place back in the 1800s to prevent the use of federal troops against the American people.
Right.
The National Guard was always to be under the control of the state governor. They were a state.
Right.
They were a state militia. And the president could not utilize them or call them up without the permission of the state governor. Now, ordinarily, the state governor would give permission. But what this new act has done is to take this away from the governor. The governor will have nothing to say if he doesn't want to release the National Guard. The president can take them anyway, and he can use them against the American people. And what is frightening about this is the fact that, first of all, if you have crowd control or demonstrations, you want to have police there. Police are trained to control crowds.
Right.
The military is controlled to kill people. That's the purpose.
Right, yeah.
You train people how to kill. You give them high-powered weapons.
Like they did in Katrina.
But basically, really, like they did at Kent State. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember Kent State.
Here you took a bunch of National Guardsmen, and you put them in a confrontation with rioting, college students, and what did they do? They killed a number of them.
Yeah, they did.
Because they had nothing else to do. I mean, if they'd been given shotguns with birdshot in it, or they'd been given, tear gas or something to defend themselves with, but they weren't. I mean, they were given high-powered rifles, and when you use the military against civilians, they're going to kill them. That's the way the situation works. And why would the president want that ability to kill Americans. Not only that, but according to this, he can actually use the regular military, which has never been allowed. That's the real significance of the policy comitatus. You have to understand that everything is in place for a dictatorship. Why would they pass this legislation unless they knew that there were going to be problems here in the United States? And while our attention is focused on the tragedy that's going on in the Middle East today, we are losing our freedom here at home.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Did you hear our program this afternoon with John Clark as we went into the background of this legislation?
No, I didn't. I'm
well,
sorry.
Well, it's so important. First of all,
I mean,
the legislation allows the use of coerced testimony. In other words, you can torture people. And you can torture them you just torture them until they confess, and then you can use the coerced testimony.
That's just unbelievable.
And of course, they've actually done away with the right of habeas corpus.
Yeah.
And of course, they said it's only for non-citizens, given that people have lived here for many years, but if they're not a citizen. But if you're a citizen and you're arrested and you're accused of being an enemy combatant, and since this legislation forbids the courts to intervene, how would you ever get into court to prove you were a citizen?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And not only that, but if you've tortured people in the past, you don't have to worry, sort of an ex post facto law. If you've tortured them in the past, that's all right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, that you can put people into prison indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing that they have done in dictatorships throughout the world.
Yeah.
But never in America.
No.
So why was George Bush, our Christian president, wanting to get that legislation through?
Well, I think they're evil people. I think Dick Cheney and Bush are evil.
Bush, you have to understand, is simply a
figurehead
for the power elite.
He goes along with it, so he's guilty too. And he'll, you know, when it comes time for judgment, you know, whenever that may be, he'll be shaking his boots.
I would anticipate he would.
I recently listened to some tapes by Malachi Martin, and he talked in terms that he said that people that were perfectly possessed, there were a lot of people in you know, high places, you know, and also celebrities and people like that are perfectly possessed.
You're absolutely right. Have you read the book he wrote called Hostage to the
Devil? I read part of it, but I listened to the tapes. I heard the tapes, and I thought it was very interesting, you know, because he really explains, you know, what the devil really is, you know. You can't see him, you know, but the good thing about it actually is that he doesn't know the future.
Amen to that.
He can't know the future.
He's mighty powerful. He's got a lot of friends here on Earth. But of course, our job is to try to expose what's going on and to stand for our Lord and to try to bring as many people as we can into a personal relationship with Him. Hey, Ray, I got to go because I got a full board. But hey,
God
thanks
bless.
So much for calling.
Bye.
God bless. Bye bye. All right, fine. Well, we've got. Let's see. Is this Roger?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Stan. I'd like to quickly pound out two brand new, freshly test-driven numbers for the Capitol Hill switchboard in Foggy Bottom District of Criminals. And while you and the listeners are quickly grabbing for your pencils, I'd like to give you you might have covered a few of these newsy bits. Now, this year, Walmart has announced they're going to discontinue last year's
anti-Christmas program, right?
Yeah. Now, to compensate, however, they are going to donate 5% of their online sales to the pro-homosexuality lobby in a show of support to help homosexuals legalize same-sex marriage. They've agreed to automatically donate 5% of online sales to the Washington, D.C. Community Center for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Trans-Perverted People. Well, they use the word transgender.
All right. So we certainly agree that this is reprehensible, and I hope people will not be shopping online with Walmarts. Anything else?
We need to wait till you come out of the break everybody hears those toll-free numbers.
Why don't you go ahead and put them off right now?
Okay, the first one is,
877-851-6437. That's 877-851-6437. The second one is 800 800-450-8293. That's 800-450-8293. It gives tax. It's a free call to the nation's capital, and you can let your congressman know how you feel. Hang on there. We'll give you a few more minutes, Roger. All right, Roger, go ahead. Do you have anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, that was it. You got the numbers right, the same ones I had. And I was hoping you'd plug, now I don't know if you'd had him on, but Ted Pike from over at truthtellers.org is doing a great job heading up opposition to the renewed push now for the new recrudescent hate crimes bill, the so-called Ted Kennedy hate crimes bill. And there's a very good chance it'll pass now that the Democrats have control. And, of course, that George Christian Walker Bush will rubber stamp the bill. You know, he's yet did he find one actual bill that he thought worthy of a veto in his whole time in office?
I don't think so. Okay, fine. Anything? Thanks very much. I really appreciate you calling, Roger. We'll talk to you later.
And you get more information on fighting that over at truthtellers.org. I think he has I haven't visited the site yet, but I think he probably does a bang-up job there. God bless you all.
God bless. Thanks very much. Well, let's go to John, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
Great. I enjoy listening to your show. And I was thinking recently about different things having to do with Bible prophecy and so on, and it occurred to me that the open border policies that are being promoted as part of, say, the European Economic Community and other zones that they're hoping to establish around the world has perhaps an unintended consequence to it, or maybe it's somewhat intended by some, but that consequence is that it makes migration of Muslims from out of their historical areas much easier. And I understand that there's quite a spread of Muslims across Europe right now, and France in particular. And it seems to me that, you know, as I was thinking about the Antichrist in the Book of the Revelation, how some people even believe he might be Muslim, others aren't sure that that's the case, but one thing, maybe he takes a play out of the Muslim playbook, because we know that later on he starts cutting people's heads off, you know. So I know at the time of that the Book of Revelation was written, of course, Islam had not risen up yet historically, so that John couldn't refer to it by name or anything, but perhaps we see it reflected in some of the practices.
Well, like, let me point out, Gary, that certainly I believe God is very unhappy with our country, both the United States and Europe have legalized abortion. And so we've killed off a large number of our children, probably 50 million of our children have died, unborn children. And I believe he's going to replace all those children we've killed with immigrants coming in to destroy this nation, because massive migration of people with a different culture and a different language who really don't want to be Americans. I mean, they're here for the material benefits, the land of milk and honey, but they have no loyalty to these ideas of freedom under God. They don't understand that our system will not work, our Constitution will not work, you know, for other than a moral and deeply religious people. And if you don't have people who are ruled by God, you're going to have a dictatorship. And I believe God is going to bring his vengeance upon this country because of what we've done in the past. And I think that he's going to use the Muslim faith to do exactly that. And hang on for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Gary calling from Yakima. Do you have anything else to say, Gary, before we let you go?
Dr. Stan, this is actually John from Spokane.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Cool. I'm sorry. Gary's the next one in line.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to agree with you. I think your assessment has a lot of merit to it, although, of course, I know you are not a hateful person, and you know, it's not out of hate that you say these things. You're just concerned for the country and everything.
Right.
I've thought about this whole end-time scenario as it's developing. And sometimes I'm kind of comforted by the thought that even though the Bible has predicted all this and we know that it's going to turn into a tyranny rather than a blessing to the world, you know, this one world government that they're trying to set up, which probably they're trying to set up, many of them are trying to set up for the benefit of a few chosen select people rather than for the benefit of the world. But we know that eventually when it falls apart, that it will sort of pave the way for the one world government that the Lord is going to set up later, you know. So it's kind of a step that has to happen, but we who have the enlightenment that Christ has brought, we kind of know how it's going to end.
Okay, God bless, and thanks very much, John. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Good night. Let's go to Gary from Yakima. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Stanley Montes. How you doing tonight?
Doing fine.
Well, good. My wife and I read your book together, The Brotherhood of Darkness. What a book. What a book, Stanley. Tremendous, tremendous book.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You were right that people who read that will never be the same. I heard about you encouraging people to buy cases out and give them away, and now I understand why you were doing that. That's what we want to do. Is when we get a bit more money here, we want to be able to give those away to people and help them to be aware of what's happening in our world. I have a thought that I want to run by you because it presented a fairly large question in my mind, and I've got to sort of set it up in order to be able to ask you this question. Can I do that?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, the synopsis of the book, these federation, they want to set up a world federation to eliminate, and they want to eliminate God out of the picture. With their knowledge, set up a world utopia society under socialistic government. They felt responsible to propagate the English culture, to bring the world under a British rule, to promote world wars, to convince the world of the feudalistic concept of war so they can organize a central world peace entity. As Churchill was involved in your book, somewhat sounds like in it, and could have encouraged U.S. troops to invade Europe sooner, earlier, and could have, but he failed to do so purposely to keep the war going.
Right.
So that the world would hate the war and be willing to surrender sovereignty to a peacekeeping regime. It seems like it would work to a degree, but it looks like to me now, if Hitler had accomplished his dastardly plan, say he conquered the world, what would he do then?
First of all, Hitler wasn't going to win the war because he could not. Where did Hitler get his military capacity? And if you read the book we carry, it's called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, you'll find out that it was Ford and General Motors who were over there building his trucks and his cars for them. It was International Telephone and Telegraph that was building a lot of his fighter planes. He was getting all sorts of help through Switzerland from American corporations. We
right.
financed this whole war. We financed Adolf Hitler.
Right.
He was the best any money could buy. Hitler wasn't going to win, but he was going to create a terrible, terrible tragedy, and 60 million people were going to die. And out of that came the United Nations. And out of that came the advance of communism into Eastern Europe. And our boys fought and died to bring freedom to the world, and then we turned Eastern Europe and signed over to the communists. Because, of course, they feared that there would not be enough impetus for the world government, and they were already at that time planning on World War III.
You're saying that they would not have allowed him to win the war?
Of course not.
They just wanted to use him as a pawn to make the world sick of war.
Right, that's right. And, of course, if you read the material that we actually have a letter I found in Colonel House's papers from Ambassador Dodd, written in 1936, to Ambassador Dodd saying, and if you want a copy of this, we'll be glad to send it to you. Just give us a call, we'll send it. Where he actually says, why are the American corporations building up the war-making, capacity of the Germans, Nobody over here wants another war. We just got out of a war. There are 100 corporations. They're building up the war-making material, and they can't make any money out of it. Do the people back at home know there's no money to be made because of the exchange controls? He didn't understand. but he didn't understand the degree of evil, and he didn't understand Colonel House was part of it. Hey, you hang on. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and do you have anything else you'd want to ask Gary?
Well, the question I have is, if he, are you still there?
Yes, uh-huh.
What was to, if he, eventually they want to have a world dictator, correct?
Right.
Well, what's to keep the world dictator after he gets power to take over the wealth of the Bilderbergers, the Rockefellers, the Morgans and the Chase Manhattans, and take over all these banks, and then kill the men who supposedly had the wealth and do away with all the people that put him up in power?
Could very well be what's going to happen, you see, but they don't believe that. They have a different worldview. They think that they're going to end up on top, just as I'm sure many of the people who were working in Germany to help Adolf Hitler thought they were going to end up on top, and of course, instead they got destroyed. Remember, Lucifer is a master deceiver. He's been deceiving people for 6,000 years, and he's still deceiving them. So, I mean, so often people think, you know, that they're going to come out on top, and then, of course, they suddenly, of course, realize what they've done. Solzhenitsyn, you know, the great Russian writer, was a dedicated communist. He was totally in favor of everything that was going on in Russia until he ended up in the gulag. And then he had an opportunity to see the other side of communism. And that's when he became an anti-communist. So often the people, in fact, if you go into the background of the original people who surrounded Lenin at the time of the revolution, I think there were 20 or 30 of them, and only one of them wasn't killed. The rest were tortured and killed. But that is the very nature of this organized evil we're up against. So understand, we're in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, and our job is to get people to see how this whole thing is coming out and that nothing is as it appears to be.
Right.
Okay?
Thank you very much. You know, the only way to really rule men is to do it God's way.
You're absolutely right, and those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. Hey, God bless.
Well,
thanks so much.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Mike, who's calling. Hey, Mike. Is this Mike from Santa Cruz?
Yeah, this is Mike from Santa Cruz. Speaking of being ruled by tyrants, I wanted to make an announcement, if I could, about a movie that's going to be showing here in Santa Cruz.
Go right ahead.
It's, I guess, sorry for the rest of the world, but this is just for the local audience, but they can actually connect with it by the Internet. But tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at our Veterans Memorial Building at 846 Front Street, the local 911 Truth Network will be putting on a production, the showing of the movie 911 Mysteries.
That's tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Veterans Hall, right?
Right.
Hold that for just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Mike is calling from Santa Cruz. He's making an announcement, which is really more or less directed at the people here in the Monterey Bay area. But tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the Veterans Hall, which is on Front Street right next to the post office in downtown Santa Cruz, there's going to be a showing of a movie. It's called the 911 Mysteries. I hear it's very, very good. In fact, we're going to have the woman who produced this a week from tonight in the second hour of this program. So anything else you wanted to say, Mike?
Yeah, I wanted to comment that this movie in particular stands out in my mind in the fact that in the rubble there were still some stubs of the central supporting columns still standing. And they show the cuts that were made by the thermite or thermate charges that were used to demolish the towers. So it's a little hard to describe on the phone like this, but you can actually find this on the web. You can go to 911mysteries.com, or you can go to 911weknow.com. And you can see the movie there. You can make a purchase of it. You can also go to 911truth.org and find all sorts of resources. But this is some of the most amazing footage on this movie, 911 Mysteries, that I haven't seen on any of the others.
Well,
it actually shows the cut columns, the physical evidence now right in front of us on the screen that shows the result of controlled demolitions.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Okay. And I'll be looking at that film myself, and maybe we'll be talking to the producer of that just a week from tonight.
That would be wonderful.
God bless. Okay, thanks so much.
Right.
Bye, right. Well, I think we've got Bill calling from Santa Cruz, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, let's see. This is Bill, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have a question or comment?
Well, I was just wondering if you had heard any news about Henry Kissinger accepting a job as advisor to the Pope.
No, I really hadn't. Is it? I'm not aware of that at all.
Just got a newsletter from David Bay today, and that was his news of the day.
Well, I'll tell you, David is really quite good. I know David, and his information is really quite accurate. We've collaborated a number of things in the past, and certainly I will look into this, but I would not discount anything that he says. He has been very reliable through the years. I'm just very surprised that I haven't heard of it, but sometimes David's way ahead of me.
Well, he's great. He had an article from the Italian newspaper, I can't remember the name of it, La Stampa or something like that, but I know you don't buy into the old-time Christian belief of the woman who rides the beast being centered in Rome and the Pope being the false prophet, but Henry Kissinger and the previous office holder of the Office of the Doctrine of the Faith, which, of course, before 1911 was the Office of the Inquisition, those two guys together are quite a formidable force. So they're David Bay, or at least this article, summed up as saying that it shouldn't be too long before the Pope shows his hand with going to Jerusalem and trying to further the plan, which, as we know, all centers around Jerusalem. But I just finished an interesting book that I sent an email to the author and gave him your number, and it's called The Queen of All. It also came through David Bay's website at his bookstore, and the title is Queen of Rome and Queen of Islam, and it's a very interesting concept to think about, say, the Pope, I mean, after the dust he kicked up last month about his comment about Islam. You would think he's going in the opposite direction, but if he could actually draw Islam and Catholicism together to reignite the Inquisition, he could finally get away with all the heretics that they're worried about.
Well, I think there are satanic forces within the Catholic Church, within the Protestant Church, within the Jewish religion, within the hierarchy of their organization. These satanic forces permeate every aspect of our society, and of course they have all of their symbols, and all of their art is right in our nation's capital, and we'll be getting Chris Pinto on again to go into that in great detail. He was just back there, had the opportunity to take up with his camera to go into many of the places most people would never get, and you will find that this is simply a beautiful display of occult architecture and occult art in our nation's capital, and it was put there by the people from the dark side. So it permeates every aspect, and we'll just have to see how things play out. But thanks so much for calling.
If I may.
Sure, go ahead.
I think that given the Babylonian connection to all the Roman doctrines, this evil is displayed, has been displayed longer and is entrenched as an acceptable religion, which, in my estimation, has just drawn in the ecumenicals under the wing of Rome, but Rome has been practicing genocide for centuries. In fact, one of your guests even mentioned the indictment of the Archbishop of Rwanda in that genocide situation.
LC, you can always pick those things out. You know, the Calvinists actually burned people at the stake if they didn't go along with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so that's right.
You find this in every aspect of it. But thanks very
much. Luther was
calling.
A Marianite also.
Okay, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Florida.
Hello?
Hello, who's this?
Hey, how you doing, Dr.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I got walking pneumonia. They've been spraying a lot here in this little farm town. And everybody's hacking and coughing, and I don't have any medical coverage, so I've been breathing steam out of a pot on the stove.
Okay, is there anything we can do for you?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you about the 1,200 flights that they're going over to Europe and Poland. They're up to 1,200 now, is what they said. I caught it.
I'm sorry, what are these flights specifically?
There's a name for it they use, and I didn't write it down, a long name.
Are these rendition flights where they're taking prisoners?
They're going to the these interrogation places.
They call it rendition. They take them over there.
Rendition, that's right.
They take them over and they torture them. And it's rather frightening that
there's no outcry
from our Christian leaders about kidnapping people and taking them off to torture them. And you don't know whether they're guilty or innocent, but you keep torturing them long enough, they'll admit to anything.
Almost reminds you of Germany in World War II, huh?
Where is the outcry from our Christian leaders? That's what disturbs me. And
yeah,
where is the outcry from the Christians? And why aren't they calling into our programs and complaining about torture and the fact that our government is justifying it? And how can they possibly, in their heart of hearts, support an administration that will condone torture? There's no place that you could justify that as a Christian.
Well, I haven't figured it out either, how that they can set and justify and co-sign all of this that's going on with this whatever kind of a government. I call it the same. The Christians did the same thing in Germany. They could have stopped Hitler before World War II. They did the same thing. They sat back and said nothing.
Well, you see, the thing is that in Germany, they followed their ministers. And there's a wonderful book we carry, and I hope everybody in the audience will want to get it. It's written by Dr. Erwin Lutzer, who was the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. The book is called Hitler's Cross, and I recommend it to you. It tells about what happened to the Christian church there in Germany, and how the ministers, 90% of them, went along with Adolf Hitler, because, of course, they were getting money from him and support. And it was a lot easier to go along and get along than to take a stand, because if you took a stand, you might end up in prison.
Well,
and so they compromised their principles.
90,000 of the Germans died in those death camps resisting Hitler.
Amen. Okay, I appreciate you calling. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
I just wanted to thank you for fighting that spiritual battle and physical battle, Dr. Stan.
Thank you.
Please don't give up.
We'll do it as long as God gives us a voice.
Amen.
And thanks so very much. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Jim calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Great. I wanted to let the guy know I was the one that called in and said I was discouraged. I didn't say I was scared. I said I was discouraged.
Well, actually, Jim, the thing is, it's so easy to get discouraged. But realize, of course, we know things are going to have to get a lot worse before they can possibly improve, and we don't know whether we're going to be able to save America or not. Only God knows that, and certainly it's going to take a great revival for America to be worthwhile saving. But our job is to do our best and to put our faith in the Lord.
Well, and that kind of brings me to my point for calling, which is... I heard Dr. Blaylock on part of last night, and I didn't know if you remembered from that book, Vaccine A. The reason I got discouraged, I read Project Daylily, and then almost immediately after it read Vaccine A. But they have a flu vaccine in Italy called Fluad, F-L-U-A-D. It actually is marketed toward elderly people, and it has squalene as an adjuvant.
And that's scary. Now, for our listeners who do not know, first of all, an adjuvant is something you put into the vaccine to make it more effective, and squalene is an oily substance that they used in our... it's experimental. It was used in the experimental vaccines we gave to our men over in the first Gulf War, and well over 100,000 of them, probably close to 250,000 of them, are ill, and over 80,000 are dead. Of the people who went to the first Gulf War. And anybody questions that, we'll be glad to send you the pages that we have from the Veterans Administration where they point that out to be true. So, I mean, why would they want to put squalene into a vaccine unless, of course, you wanted to kill the elderly people?
Well, and that's, you know, the gentleman, Mr. Matsumoto, that wrote Vaccine A said that the way they design some of these trials, they don't do long-term follow-ups. And, of course, in some of these folks that were, they did a lot of the testing in nursing homes, so these weren't people who might notice. You know, some of them probably already have balance disturbances and so forth. So they wouldn't notice anything from that. Plus, the follow-up ends after about 2 weeks.
Well, I don't know if you recall it in the book Vaccine A, but he was talking about an experiment that had been done on our military. After the Second World War, I think it was 46, 47, with a flu vaccine or cold vaccine, I've forgotten which one it was, and it contained mineral oil in it. And they gave it to, I don't know, tens of thousands of our servicemen, and then they followed them along to see what would happen, and so many of them died or developed progressive neurological changes or, you know, autoimmune disease. They finally stopped doing it. But they experimented with tens of thousands of young men without ever telling them what they were doing. And, of course, it was such a disaster that, but they can't tell the American people, and they certainly can't let our servicemen know that they experiment on them. They experiment on them with no concern at all about their health. For as Henry Kissinger said, and he's quoted in the book, The Final Days, I believe it's in the pages 90, 96, somewhere there. Anyway, I'll be glad to send the page to any of our listeners. Henry Kissinger is quoted as saying, the military people are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. Which is why I think it's so significant that Henry Kissinger was picked, you know, by our president to be his advisor during the transition period when before he became what into office. Why Henry Kissinger was picked to be the head of the 911 commission. Henry Kissinger is one of the most evil men in the world.
You really can't make that up, can you?
No, you really can't. But I mean, that quotation: our military men are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for, and that's the attitude, and that's why I discourage people from wanting to volunteer for America. You want to fight for America. The battle is here. The battle is one of ideas. And, of course, passing out pamphlets and books and doing what you're doing tonight, calling into radio stations. Don't get discouraged, though, Jim. We're up against organized evil, but our God's a lot stronger than their God.
Well, and I wanted to say, if anyone doubts what Dr. Stan just said, Amazon.com has a feature where you can search inside many of the books. And after you said that quote, I went and looked it up. And what he actually said is that they're dumb, stupid beasts to be used as pawns in foreign policy.
Right.
And if you look that book up by Woodward and Bernstein, The Last Days, and you search for the word pawns or beasts inside that book, it'll take you right to the page on your computer. You don't have to, you can read it right on Amazon.
I think the book is The Final Days, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I can, you know, it's funny, I can remember the quote, but I always get mixed up on Final or Last Days.
Well, I appreciate so much your calling, Jim. And,
yes, sir.
But remember that our job is simply to get the information out. And of course, for the sake of the people out there, tell them about what they're, how they're poisoning them and their children with the fluoride and with the mercury and the vaccines and with the dental fillings and with the aspartame and the MSC and so many of the things we're being told to do. For years we were told, oh, you don't want to eat butter, you want to eat the trans fatty acids, you know, knowing full well that this was really producing the arteriosclerosis. I wonder how many millions of Americans they've killed.
Now, do you think all that DU they're spreading all over in Dalmatia and Asia and all the rest of it, do you think all that will affect us over here?
Eventually, sure it will. I mean, you can't contaminate half the world without contaminating the rest of it, certainly with travel such as we have. But, we will not be as terribly impacted as the people of Iraq are.
And I'll just tell you this and let you go. That was whatever that fella called and said about the Pope and Kissinger was true. Alex Jones had an article up on this website yesterday, and I already emailed it to you before you got off the phone with him.
All right.
It's not the same one from that David Bay. It's from Alex's website, but it's probably...
Well, I'll tell you what. Alex and David are really... they're very good. I have the greatest respect for both of them. I don't have the time. I don't have a research staff to be picking up all these things for me. I have to do it all my own. But I rely upon them, and I rely upon callers like you who point me in the right direction. I will certainly check it out.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Good night. God bless. Bye-bye. And we'll be back in just a moment. We'll take a call from Roger here as soon as we get back. And Again, this has been Open Night Wednesday. Hope you enjoy it. I always do, and it's always a challenge because I never know what people are going to bring up. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Hi, Roger. Do you have something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, it wouldn't do any good buried in the break. That it wouldn't get, because it was for the world banders who get buried in a commercial right now. And that is, could you carry me over to take another call in the meantime?
No, well, I'm afraid not, because you were the last call, and this is the end of the program. So why don't you put off what you want to, and we got an Internet audience all over America that's listening to what you're saying.
Yeah, I just did want to put out the two, or have you put out your earlier world band frequencies. I'm guessing half or more of your listeners, appreciative listeners, are unaware of them, and to try to get the folks to shove in a tape for the third hour only rerun of Dave and Joyce earlier today on the Power Hour. They had an excellent show on fighting the sale of our turnpikes and such, or leasing of them for 75 years to... Like there's a Ed Rendell who just floated inside of the last week here in Pennsylvania, sell off the Pennsylvania Turnpike for some $30 billion of playing around money so that the citizens of Pennsylvania can be in thrall to the King of Spain paying tribute for the next 75 years to drive these highways. And this is, you know, a nationwide scandal which the major media crats are avoiding like the plague. It's a very important issue, as I'm sure you're well aware.
Well, I think people have to understand that the royalty are still, of course, in charge in Europe, and they're spreading their influence over here. And Joan Dion has an excellent newsletter this month going into, of course, how all of these royal families tie into the British royal family, and whether it be the royal family there in Spain with Juan Carlos, or certainly in Belgium or the Netherlands or the Habsburgs, all of these royal families are still there. Fabulously wealthy. They, of course, tie into the Club of Rome. They tie into the Order of the Garter. They tie into all these secret societies, this black nobility, as they're referred to. And they truly are, of course, they're part and parcel, and a very important parcel of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And now they're coming over here. And, of course, the Spanish royal family is going to be, in large part, financing the Trans-America Highway.
Well, very quickly, the folks could tune the, now after your last hour, your next hour, that is, they won't get any but the third hour on frequency 5.070. They can get that excellent third hour rerun, and God bless.
All right, fine. Thank you so much, Roger. And, of course, that was Roger calling from Pennsylvania and encouraging people to listen to the third hour of Joyce's program. Joyce does a great job. Incidentally, both Joyce and I are up on Telstar 5, and you can listen to both of us 9 hours a day. 9 hours a day of Joyce and Dave. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply pointing out that during the break, Roger had been talking about what a great job that Joyce Riley had done today, talking about, of course, how they're selling so many of our highways and bridges and others to international companies. They're simply selling America. And this is really true. What they're doing, of course, is selling our infrastructure, many of our major corporations, and we will simply be working for people, for foreigners, as in the past they have worked for us. And our leaders are betraying the American people. And, of course, you would like, though, to hear Joyce, and you have difficulty getting her. She's on Telstar 5, and you can get a dish and satellite very inexpensively, I think $170 for the dish and the satellite. And then you can listen to Joyce Riley 9 hours a day. You can listen to Radio Liberty 9 hours a day. Our programs are up there 9 hours a day. Tremendous fidelity, and we certainly think it's an excellent method of getting the material. Certainly sometimes short waves, a little intermittent. The Internet is great, but if for one reason or another you don't have those, you can get us on Telstar, Radio Liberty, and the Power Hour each 9 hours a day. Pastor Chuck Christmeyer is up there, and, of course, Pastor Butch Palm. So that's our own little satellite, and, of course, we utilize that for getting our taking information to our shortwave stations and the like. So this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help, if you can possibly help us, because we're on almost 60 outlets every week, and it's, shortwave, Internet, various satellites we're on, as well as the radio stations we buy time on. And if you think our message is important, why, we hope many of you seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can go up on our webpage and pull down anything we have up there free of charge. And we have lots of books, of course, and videos and four tape sets we hope you'll want to get. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, please consider getting it. And then you can get the video or the VHS, and you copy those with our blessing and get the information out. It is actually up on the Internet. You can actually see the videos. All of our videos are free up there on the Internet, under Google or YouTube. And we've got so many great ones. Well, one of my favorite is one by Dr. Ayub recently on the influenza vaccine. And what a scam this is and all the damage we're doing to it. We have some great DVDs on water fluoridation. Is your drinking water safe? And Let the Truth Be Told. That's two separate DVDs by Dr. David Kennedy, both available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we also hope that many of you will give, if you'd like to get the information on long-term storage food, and I believe everybody should be prepared, because I believe we're moving into some very difficult and trying times here in America. Why, if you'd like to get a food catalog or a catalog of the health products that you need to have on hand in large supply, if you'd like to know how to maintain your own health and build up your immunity, let me suggest Dr. Blaylock's wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. If you'd like to know about nutrition's effect on your mind, let me suggest Nutrition and Behavior, which is a DVD that with Dr. Blaylock. That's Nutrition and Behavior. Well, there's so many things we could talk about. The Miracle of Magnesium is an excellent book, and you need to understand that probably everybody is magnesium deficient. You've got to start learning how to look after your health. Because believe me, as we move into very difficult times, you're going to have to be in the best possible shape physically and mentally. And your mental acuity is very much dependent upon your physical health. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to us there 5 hours a day. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests and the views of our callers. And, well, right now we have on the line Andrew Skousen. Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan.
Hey, it's always good to have you. So how's the weather over there in Las Vegas?
You know what? I actually felt rather cold the last couple of days. It's supposed to get below freezing tonight or tomorrow night, but compared to the rest of the country, I think that we have very little to complain about.
All right, fine. Well, I think we feel exactly the same way here in Santa Cruz. So anyway, Andrew, of course, is one of the researchers on the world affairs brief. He's Joel Skousen's son, and we've asked him to come on to give us sort of an overview of really the important things that we're facing today. So you pick up the story there, Andrew.
Great, Dr. Stan. Well, some of the issues that we've covered in this last week's world affairs brief include recommendations for changing the current status in Iraq and what's involved with those recommendations and what we think about them, as well as if we have time, I'd like to cover a little bit about the developments in Lebanon and maybe touch on the poisoning of the Russian defector spy and about some of the issues or points about that have come out in the news that we think are worth noting.
All right, fine. You go. You just pick them all up and run with it.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. There have been a great deal of proposals that are being talked about, both by media pundits as well as the new senators and congressmen that are in office now, about about attempts to improve or fix the situation in Iraq. Most of the adjustments are just that, adjusting or tweaking military policy. In truth, though, there's very little do that we think the U.S. can do to improve things. Things are pretty bad there, and probably the only things that could make things worse is that the U.S. stays there. It's got, of course, a continuing growing list of construction projects, and it's difficult to say what would happen with those projects if the U.S. were just to drop the ball and leave right away. But let's look at what the alternatives are. First of all, the situation in Iraq is continuing to go downhill. Last week there was a 6-car bombing that ended up with a death toll of some 160 Shiites, and the amount of targeted attacks inside of Baghdad continues to increase, illustrating that Iraq is continuing to descend into chronic anarchy and civil war. A continued U.S. presence in the Middle East could, in fact, exacerbate the hatred that the religious Muslims feel towards the United States and Americans in general, specifically because we've put ourselves into a position of arrogating ourselves as being the right people to form, well, in this case, a slightly botched form of democracy upon Iraq.
Hold that tough. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty with Andrew Skousen. All All right, Andrew, go ahead and pick the story. You're saying that, you know, we're certainly, formed a bot's form of democracy. I do not believe this is democracy at all. Democracy is one man, one vote. When you've got 60%, you know, Shias, you're going to have one election, and you're going to have the Shias in control, and that's the end of the democratic process. So they may go through the motion of having votes, but they're not going to matter. What we have done is established a Shia molocracy. In other words, according to the constitution that we put in there, why, this is going to be an Islamic government, and everything will be controlled not by the elected representatives, but by the mullahs. And in fact, all laws are to follow Sharia law, which will be determined by the mullahs. Why would we have done something like that? We had a ruthless secular dictatorship before, and now we've replaced it with that ruthless, sectarian Muslim dictatorship. So we've replaced one dictatorship with another, and you can see what's going to happen to the Sunnis when the Shias are in control. And instead of doing what's logical and splitting into three separate parts and letting each part, you know, run itself, the Shias have their country, the Sunnis have their country, the Kurds have their country. No, we want to keep all together so we can keep the chaos going, so we can justify staying, in my estimation. What are your thoughts, Andrew?
I absolutely agree. This is a country that is bound by centuries of ethnic, religious, and political tensions. It's a country that is bound to fester with these predicaments that people are forced to live under with the boundaries that are being enforced.
And I think people don't understand this was actually a country did not exist as a country really until after the First World War, and the Ottoman Empire collapsed, and at that point why the British went in and took three warring groups and put them into one country, knowing full well they were going to create an unstable country that could only be controlled by dictatorship. And they wanted to be able to manipulate things there. That's why they created this unstable country with three different groups that they knew would always be at odds, just exactly as today here in the United States we're bringing literally tens of millions of people from south of the border here with a different culture who don't necessarily want to be Americans at all. If they want to be Americans, why, I certainly have no objection, but what they want is warring groups in Iraq and then right here in America. That's what it's all about. You can play one group against the other. Go right ahead, Andrew. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to bring our other stations on board here. Okay, go right ahead, Andrew.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I think that you're absolutely right that this country built out of turmoil was done so intentionally at the end of the First World War in order to create a location where conflict would fester. To be able to ignite certain conflicts, to be able to come riding in, supposedly to control things. I mean, just for that reason, to control things and to be able to use the conflict to be able to justify continued intervention, which is what exactly we're seeing right now. And this conflict is bound to continue. In fact, with the U.S. still stationed there, it is bound to just exacerbate this conflict. The civil war and strife that is going on is taking advantage of the U.S. kind of keeping people together in this area that foments hatred and allows all of these groups to band together and fight against each other and against the Americans that are occupying the situation. So when you see this in this context, you start to get an idea of what the supposed professionals are up against when they come up with these recommendations about what to do about the war in Iraq now, and of course there are a great number of commissions and groups in Washington that are all preparing their recommendations about what to do with the war in Iraq. A few of these here. Let's see. One of them is the Iraq Policy Review, which was recently established by the Bush administration to harness expertise from within the government itself.
Well, you're talking about the study group, the Iraq Study Group, ISG.
That's right.
I mean, this is the one that's headed by James Baker III, right? And, of course, it's got all of the usual suspects on it, the whole Council on Foreign Relations crowd. And they were told, of course, it really is going to come up with a solution. And what are your thoughts? Anyway, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, it's the Baker-Hamilton Commission. Like you said, it's headed up by James Baker and by Lee Hamilton. This is a group that has garnished a great deal of media attention.
But of course, they never mentioned that both Lee Hamilton and James Baker III come from the Council on Foreign Relations. And Lee Hamilton was for about 10 years a member of the Trilateral Commission. He's not on the latest list, but he's certainly one of this elite group who's running the world. Go ahead.
That's right. That's exactly true. And so this study group is well, it's difficult to say until they actually come out with their results. Their results, I believe, are due out on the 6th of December. But in the meantime, it has been helping the Bush administration, surprisingly enough, because it serves as a vehicle to take the public's opinion away from focusing on exactly what's happening in Iraq itself to what the professionals are saying about Iraq, which is not the same thing. We have here greater interest from our media focusing on our own domestically focused news corporations and what is actually happening abroad. All the while, of course, Americans are being encouraged by these domestic professionals to buy into the illusion that the Iraq study group is doing something concrete to find a successful way out of it.
And, you know, they're the various people who got us into this mess, you know, this whole idea that, you know, there is an elite. They knew exactly what they were doing when they got us to go to war with Afghanistan and then got us to war with Iraq. Remember that George Bush is simply a figurehead for the power elite, and of course James Baker III and of course Lee Hamilton are very much higher up in this hierarchy of evil than George Bush is. He's simply at a lower level. He is the front man. He's the man you see. But the real power lies with the people in this group, and people like Henry Kissinger and Zygmunt Brzezinski, all part of this, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. Go ahead.
That's right. Well, this study group doesn't have much to work with. There's quite frankly not many good options to recommend, even if they were going to try to hide behind a supposed good option. Several of the other policy recommendation groups that have come out, for instance, a group from the Pentagon has recently completed its own study and supposedly presented to the president their recommendations, which were essentially three possible options. These are according to Tom Ricks. He says the recommendations given to President Bush by the Pentagon were go big, go home, and go long. But most of the planners, as far as we can make out right now, are actually going for a hybrid of all of these. Namely, go big for a short time while transitioning to go long. In other words, increasing troops, actually, for a short time to try to give the impression of making a concerted effort, then starting a tiny but withdrawal of troops, but so tiny that the public won't notice that we are still intending to stay in Iraq for a long, long time. This is actually what we think is probably going to happen with the recommendations of these professional groups.
And I think it's so important that it's really all a matter of perception on the part of the American people. We're supposed to believe that they really are going to do something, they're going to come up with a good solution, and of course by increasing the troop strength over there, the idea is we're really going to try to solve this problem, we're going to try to stop all these militias, we're going to try to stop the violence by bringing in more troops. The truth of the matter is we don't want to stop it, because if there were no chaos over there, if there was a peaceful society, how could we justify staying there indefinitely, as we have in Germany for the last 60 years, as we have in Japan for the last 60 years, as we have in South Korea for the last 50 years? We have to have a problem in the Middle East to justify staying there as far as the American people are concerned. So the last thing we would want would be a really peaceful Middle East.
That's exactly right. And there's a great deal of talk about actually increasing the troop movement for a short amount of time. In fact, there's a congressional representative. I'm sure you've heard of Charles Rangel, who is claiming, of course, to be an anti-war advocate, but is actually recommending that they reinstate the draft. His ostensible intentions are to make the war equally unappealing to everyone, so that everyone is tied up in the war and everybody will want to go home. But in fact, if you take a look at his the bill that he is recommending in Congress, he is some of his ideas echo this recommendation that we send a mass of troops there to supposedly solve things quickly, so that we can then start to pull them back out. We frankly don't think that there is going to be a draft reinstated unless there is another major Pearl Harbor type event that were to occur.
There's one thing to be said for the idea that if this were affecting people here at home, if they were being hurt by it, then there would be a much more of an outcry against the war. And as your dad has said, if we were having to pay for it, if every person was getting a bill for $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 for this foolish, stupid war, they would begin to complain about it. If they knew their son or their daughter was going to be drafted to be sent over there, possibly killed or maimed for life, they would be much more concerned. It's when it's somebody else's son or daughter are going over there to die. Or it's when Iraqi women or children are being killed, but that doesn't affect us. And we're getting this war on the cheap. We're not having to pay for it. It's all being done on borrowed money. And this whole thing is being funded, will be funded by our children and our grandchildren. Because we're doing it all on debt. We are not paying for the war. And that's exactly what Lyndon Johnson did with the Vietnam War. That's what George Bush is doing with this war. So it doesn't affect us other than we see it on television and we say, oh, isn't that too bad? Look at all those burning buildings and look at those. But it's not real. If you were having to pay for this, it would be very real. If it were your son or your daughter or your father or your brother coming back crippled or dead in a coffin, then I think there'd be much more of an outcry from the American people and asking why it is that we really went to war with Iraq. Did we really go to war with Iraq because, of course, they were involved with what happened on 9/11? Nobody in the greatest imagination would suggest that. No, we went to war because Saddam Hussein was such a wicked and evil man, we had to replace him. You know, he tortures people. Why, of course, Saddam Hussein is terrible. He tortures people. He killed a lot of people. But then haven't we tortured people? Haven't we killed a lot of people in this war? Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Andrew Scalzo. Andrew, go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, we talked about some of the recommendations in Iraq. I think it's worth noting that the recommendation that it is important that we continue to train Iraqis, and that if we train enough Iraqi security forces, they will save the day. Well, as Ray McGovern points out, there are many reasons to be skeptical about the effectiveness of U.S. training. First, report after report indicates the limited success and notable failures of U.S. training. Second, it's doubtful that American forces, the object of much hostility in Iraq, are even sufficiently familiar with the local conditions and traditions, not to mention the language, to impart the specialized military knowledge required to their Iraqi counterparts. So the U.S. military training itself is by no means perfect or necessarily applicable. As a recent article in the Weekly Standard by Eric Eglin, he writes, according to one soldier in Iraq, his unit spent days going over how to clear a foxhole, something many had already trained to do numerous times in their career. The problem is that the enemy we face in Iraq is not entrenched in foxholes, but moves fluidly and blends into the civilian population. The key issue regarding creating a reliable home security force in Iraq is not training as such, but as Charles Krauthammer points out in one of his, he says, where in Tesla moments, it's a question of allegiance. The chances of members of the various Iraqis under arms giving genuine allegiance to a central Iraqi government or to any likely Iraqi government in the foreseeable future range from slim to non-existent. Ethnic and religious differences and widespread infiltration of the army, not to mention the police by sectarian forces, are so pervasive that it is debatable whether anyone can accurately speak of a, quote, Iraqi army. What will keep these people under control? Like he says, there's a problem with allegiance here. So the problems encountered in Iraq aren't being solved by the current solutions that we're proposing.
And of course, certainly the idea of building up an Iraqi army that can take control. We've been working at this now for over 3.5 years, at least 3.5 years. To rebuild the army. We were able to defeat Germany in 3.5 years. Why is it taking so long to build an army in Iraq? Because we're not really trying, and even if we did, would it have any allegiance to the central authority? I think the point is well taken. They would have, the Sunnis would have an allegiance to a Sunni government, the Shias would have allegiance to a Shia government, but the Sunnis are never going to have an allegiance to a Shia government, and that strife is going to continue. And that's exactly what the people in Washington, D.C., who created this whole mess, want. The last thing they want is a peaceful Iraq. Until you understand that, nothing makes sense. How could you spend 3.5 years trying to build an Iraqi army? Well, first of all, why did you destroy the old one? To create chaos? Why did you disband the police force and the civil service? To create chaos? And you mean to tell me now, suddenly we want to get stability over there? I think until you understand there's another agenda, nothing really makes sense. And we'll be back in just a moment with Andrew. Okay, I guess it's Andrew Skousen. Go right ahead, Andrew.
Thank you. I think that you're absolutely right, Dr. Stan, about the situation here in Iraq that we've been talking about. There is a good deal of talk about this idea that no matter what, we'll keep some kind of control there. In fact, this is difficult, if not impossible, to do now. Simon Jenkins in The Guardian has this to say. He says, as we approach the beginning of the end in Iraq, there will be much throat clearing before reality replaces denial. For the moment, denial still rules. He was shocked at how unaware even anti-Americans were of the depth of the predicament in Iraq. that compare it with Vietnam or the Balkans, but in fact, it's worse. It's total anarchy. He says that all sentences beginning with what we should do now in Iraq are devoid of meaning. We are in no position to do anything. We have no potency. That is the definition of anarchy. Our comments about this, we think that the fomenting and continuance of this anarchy is, in fact, as you mentioned, the policy here. This is the intent of the globalists. This is a secret collusion to promote even greater conflict, and this can be seen by what the current presidential candidates are proposing for Iraq. As we pointed out before, there are a great number of people that are proposing that more and more troops be sent over to Iraq. This is echoed, in fact, by the presidential candidate for 2008, Senator John McCain. He also is in favor of sending more American lives across the sea to Iraq. He is calling for sending substantially more troops to Iraq. If McCain, of course, really thinks that the situation can be rescued by more troops, he's mistaken. This is a difficult topic because it is so involved with what is going on with Iraq, with the problems that are constantly being fomented here, and all of the talk about what is supposed to happen, and yet no real effective changes are being implemented here. Consequently, it is resulting in greater and greater anarchy, and yet public opinion here at home is being pulled away from seeing this more and more, except in cases where, for instance, 160 people die because of a string of six car bombings. Then that makes the news. The rest of the news is focused on these little groups that are talking about what they're supposedly going to recommend for Iraq. And in fact, it distracts attention from the key point, which is that we really don't have a good position in Iraq, and that the proper thing there is to pull out at this point. But the intent is not to do its best. The intent is actually to allow and permit conflict there. This same process is happening in other countries besides just the Balkans and Afghanistan. It is also happening in Lebanon. If I can switch gears here quick, I'd actually like to delve into a little bit of what's going on in Lebanon. Gideon Lachman of the UK Financial Times has a fairly cogent background on the deteriorating political situation in Lebanon. He says this: the recent murder of Pierre Gemayel in Lebanon seems to support some of the darker predictions for the Middle East that have been voiced over the past month. He says that there are several competing groups inside of Lebanon, as well as the exterior nations who are kind of fighting and influencing these things as well. There's Syria, Iran, and Israel, which is backed by the U.S., which are all sort of helping create and exacerbate the conflict that is already a natural part of the Lebanese society because of the mixtures of culture and the centuries of history that the groups there have, just like in Iraq.
And of course the question is, who actually did kill this man? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and we're simply talking about the recent assassination of the Christian leader there in Lebanon. And, of course, immediately everybody says, oh, it's Syria, it's Syria. Well, we don't know that it was Syria that was behind this. In fact, it would be very foolish of Syria to suddenly assassinate this man at this time. Could it be that Israel assassinated him to put the blame on Syria? Could it be that the United States, somebody at the CIA, finished him off so that we could justify bringing increasing pressure to bear and maybe even going to war with Syria? These things are not so that outlandish at all when you realize that it would appear that we really intend to expand the war over there in the Middle East to Syria and Iran, because the dark and sinister forces that work behind the scenes really do not want peace in the Middle East, and I fear that their intent, one way or another, to draw us into a war with the Islamic world. And there's a tremendous amount of propaganda here in the United States today to get us to hate the Muslims, and the same way propaganda in the Middle East and throughout the Muslim world to get the Muslims to hate the United States. This is being done for a specific purpose, and when you understand that, it would appear to me that we're simply on the threshold of World War III. Go ahead and pick up the story there, Andrew.
Absolutely. It's completely true that the death last week, or the assassination of the anti-Syrian politician Pierre Gamaliel, who was at that time Lebanon's industry minister, has provoked and ignited tensions between pro and anti-Syrian factions like very little else could, and consequently it has a suspicious aspect to it that makes it seem like it might well have been a provoked incident. The Western media has been charging that Syria was behind this latest death, as well as a fairly recent death of Rafiq Harari. However, there are many analysts in the Middle East who are convinced that both of these deaths were perhaps caused by agent provocateurs of the West in order to create more conflict with Lebanon.
And I think that's so important, is the fact that the people in the Middle East are much smarter than the average American. They realize, of course, that if this was done by agent provocateurs, it would justify expanding the war, which they're going to have to suffer from.
That's right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Andrew Skousen. Before we go on, Andrew, I'd like you to get out your email address, your website, and your telephone number if people would like to subscribe to the World Affairs Brief. And I can certainly tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that every morning after I go through my emails, the first thing I do is read the World Affairs Brief, because it keeps me from having to certainly go through the whole web. Andrew and the rest of the staff there at World Affairs Brief goes over all of the material regularly, and by 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, they have it posted there. What time do you get up in the morning, Andrew?
Well, my alarm goes off about 5:30, but it's usually 9:46 before I actually make it up.
And then, of course, when do you start working on getting those stories posted?
Well, that's a constant process. We actually have several researchers who are constantly scouring the web for all of these events, and they and myself, when we find a particular story that we think is appropriate for everyone else, we send that in as a recommendation, and there's a filter that is put in place by the senior editors, headed by my father, and he kind of makes sure that the most important news stories are the ones that actually get posted on the website.
All right, well, website. I think you do a great job. How can people get in touch with your website? How they can get in touch with you and Sydney? If they'd like to perhaps subscribe, how would they go about doing that?
the best way, I think, is for them to log on to our website, which is www.worldaffairsbrief.org. That's all one word, worldaffairsbrief.org. .com. And they can log in there and see all of the news stories that we pulled up, and there are also links to be able to sign up for the World Affairs Brief itself, which is actually a more in-depth analysis of the news rather than just links. The website has links to all of the news that we think are important. If they sign up, they can get the weekly edition of the World Affairs Brief sent to their email box, and that keeps people up to date on what we think are happening with all of this analysis. And if people don't have access to the internet, they can get a free print edition of the World Affairs Brief by calling toll free 1-888. I'm sorry, calling toll free 1-877-518-5888. Once again, that's 1-877-518-5888.
All right.
And that will get them either a subscription, they can sign up there, or they can get a free copy sent to them in the mail.
All right, fine. That's worldaffairsbrief.com, and let me recommend you go there. Go ahead, Andrew. What's the next subject you'd like to cover?
Great. Well, I'd like to just polish this off here. The about the situation in Lebanon itself, and that is that there is a great deal of conflict there. Lebanon is not just divided on sectarian lines. This recent death of the anti-Syrian politician has sort of ignited the opposing factions, which are mostly Shiite Muslims and Christians that are there in Lebanon at this time. But Lebanon also has the misfortune of being the battleground for conflict being fought out by powerful neighbors. Syria is there, which is fighting to retain its influence in the country, and of course it is the one being accused of instigating these murders or causing them. Iran, however, is also a big player in Lebanon, and they, together with Syria, are the major backers for the radical Islamic party, Hezbollah. And then on the opposite side is Israel and the U.S., which as you and I have been pointing out, have been actually fomenting conflict as well and encouraging this to happen. So it's likely that that more and more of the conflict will be fomented inside of Lebanon to encourage that a peacekeeping force be installed in Lebanon to take control of that area. I think that is one of the ultimate goals here.
And the whole idea would be, since really countries no longer can manage things on their own, we have to have more or less an international police force, an international military force, and it's all really stepping stones along the way towards the one world government and the new world religion. Would that be a fair statement?
It is, and with the There's currently an investigation that is supposedly being put forward by the UN about this assassination of this Syrian politician. And the charges of increased Syrian and Iranian interference in Lebanon are sort of conveniently feeding the Bush administration with reasons to encourage the UN both to come into to this area, as well as to kind of play their own political points of view, which are to reject the diplomatic overtures by Syria and Iran, which have recently recommended holding more diplomatic talks with the U.S. on bringing peace to Iraq. And it's just a big maelstrom right now with the conflict that is occurring there. But it'll be difficult to see what will happen now, because the UN will set up a most likely a war crimes type tribunal here, which historically have been considerably unfavorable to the region there, and almost always considerably partial from what history has shown. It's difficult to say. We'll have to see what happens both in Iraq and Lebanon, but our assessment of the situation there is not good right now. It looks like continued conflict is on the agenda for both of those countries, and whether or not that's meant to ignite or provoke a conflict through Syria and Iran to attack Israel and provoke a U.S. response, military response toward either Syria or Iran or both, which as we've been covering seems to be on the agenda.
And I think
we'll have to be determined.
I think really what's so tragic is that certainly the way that Israel is in today. I mean, certainly in the Gaza area, why, of course, the Hamas faction of the Palestinians is certainly being funded by through Egypt. They're bringing in all sorts of missiles. They're strengthening their position. And so what is Israel doing? Why, they're giving rifles and military supplies to the Fatah group. And eventually Fatah and Hamas are going to unite and attack Israel on one side, and then on the other side, because Lebanon, Hezbollah is being funded by both Syria and Iran, and they're preparing for a strike on Israel. So Israel is going to have to, if they really want to survive, is going to have to attack the areas where the supplies are coming from. They're going to have to attack both Syria and Iran, and when they do that, we are going to be drawn into the fray. This is what people don't understand. But people have forgotten that we certainly brought the mullahs to power in Iran back in 1979 when we intentionally toppled the Shah of Iran and brought this radical Islamic government to power that hates America. Why would you do something like that? We certainly have tolerated the rule of Assad there and his dad before him in Syria. Our CIA was constantly working with their intelligence units until very recently. They may still be, so nothing is as it appears to be. And if you look and watch the leader, listen to what the leaders of Iran are saying, it is totally irrational. I mean, certainly Ahmadinejad's talking about wiping Israel off the face of the earth, that the West is going to be destroyed, that America is going to be destroyed and wiped off the face of the earth. Why would he be making these statements unless he is playing a part, and this part is to draw us into a major war in the Middle East? Are there forces, are there spiritual forces that are simply laying the groundwork for a war that is going to plunge not only the Middle East, but the whole world into the worst confrontation we've ever imagined? Go ahead, Andrew.
No, it's true. It's true. And the political situation in Lebanon could well be the tinderbox to facilitate that whole situation from occurring. With these antagonisms being thrown back and forth about Syria, it's putting a great deal of pressure on the Signoria government currently in place in Lebanon right now, and it could possibly cause this government to fold if one third of the government ministers quit. A new government must be formed, but at this point, all of the factions in Lebanon are past talking and will likely begin open confrontation in the streets. If that happens, it may well, you know, tear Lebanon apart and possibly cause Syria and Iran to join the fray.
I think people have to understand within Lebanon you have a Christian element, you have a Shia Muslim element, and of course these two really had lived together in peace for many years until the Palestinians invaded their country in the mid-80s, and the Israelis wanted to go in and really finish off the Palestinian army that had been constantly attacking them. And Ronald Reagan demanded a ceasefire, and then the Palestinian army, which was just about to be destroyed, was taken over to Tunisia and refinanced and strengthened and allowed to come back to continue the war. And of course that began to lead to the Israeli occupation of Lebanon, and of course there was peace there for a time, and then we put pressure on on Israel to withdraw, and of course when they withdrew, then all the Christians who'd been backing them were slaughtered, since then everything has just been in a total situation of unrest in Lebanon, and the peace of where you had Muslim and Christian living together is gone, and I don't know that it's ever going to be able to be restored, or that nation which was known at one time as the Switzerland of the Near East with banks and prosperity and tourism is simply a hellhole with violence and fear and cluster bombs and hatreds growing that I do not know that it will ever be healed again. So pick the story up there, Andrew.
I think that that's an absolutely very important point. In fact, it looked like most of the economic boom that was occurring in Lebanon at that time, like you said, because of the banks and the tourist trade and so many people from the Middle East heading to Lebanon for vacations and things, it actually eased up a bit all of the natural strife and tension that was going on among the people in that country, and seemed like that was going to help, you know, eventually soften this century-old antagonism between all of these religious and political parties that are at home there in Lebanon. But that was, of course, destroyed because of the instigation of Hezbollah by Syria and Iran, and the consequential counterattack by Israel, which in our opinion was what was purposely overdone. It wasn't surgically executed like it has been in years past, and consequently destroyed much of the potential for prosperity that Lebanon had before, and consequently created a great deal of antagonism and flared up all of these opinions and eradicated all of the goodwill that was beginning to occur between these rival factions in this country, and basically destroyed the decent potential for hope and prosperity that Lebanon had for a long time, and that has been essentially destroyed. So we'll continue to watch what happens there.
You have to speak up just a little louder, please.
I'm sorry. Better now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to switch gears now and talk a bit more about. I'm sorry, and talk about the recent poisoning of the Russian defector Alexander Litvinenko. I assume that you're familiar with some of the...
Yes, I am.
The
right.
Case. He was admitted to a hospital in England where he had been living since he moved from Russia, and most of the doctors who have been examining the case have attributed it to an internal form of radiation.
In fact, apparently it was a polonium-20, a very, very toxic chemical that's a byproduct of a nuclear power plant. This is not something you get down at your local Rexall drugstore.
Right.
A very sophisticated poison. And many people feel that this was done by, of course, Vladimir Putin, because, of course, the spy had been very critical of the Russian regime. So we pick up the story there.
All right. Many commentators assume that directly or indirectly the Kremlin had a hand in the poisoning. The poison at first was assumed to be thallium, but now a great many of the professionals have declared it to possibly be polonium-210, which is one of the rarest radioactive substances on the planet. What makes this a good poison is that it depletes very quickly. It loses its radioactive qualities and essentially disappears.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment, Andrew. All right, go ahead. You were telling us, of course, that this the polonium suddenly dissipates, and then you can't find it. So anyway, but apparently they did find it, and many people think that the Russian government was behind that. What are your thoughts?
Well, it certainly had to be somebody who had access to this very difficult poison to obtain. The superficial evidence supports the assumption that the Russians wanted Litvinenko eliminated. I mean, he revealed that the FSB, the modern day equivalent of the KGB, was behind the Moscow apartment bombings that President Putin had blamed on the Chechen resistance. According to this ex-spy, the whole bombing of this apartment complex was a way for the Russian government to point blame at the Chechen.
And so basically what you're saying is the Russians bombed their own buildings, they
right.
killed their own people, and then they could blame it on the Chechens to justify the Chechen war.
That's right. Now, this probably wouldn't have been enough of information for the Russians to want to kill this man. This has been widely reported before by many other sources. One of the other major points that he was declaring to the media before his death was that he supported the story that the anti-Putin journalist Anna Politkovskaya was murdered by the FSB, by the KGB. She was also a victim of a prior poison attempt. Her body, I believe, was found after it had been beaten and tortured, and was found dead in very suspicious circumstances. And a great many people have declared that it was because of her stories against the Russian government that she was taken and killed. And he backed that up as well.
And so basically the basic of the moral is this story is if you're going to speak out against Putin and tell the truth, why your life is going to be in danger. Andrew, we're out of time, but thank you very much for being with us. It's always provocative, and we'll certainly look forward to having you on again here on Radio Liberty in the not-too-distant future.
My pleasure.
And again, of course, this is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly I hope you enjoyed the summary, certainly, of what's going on in the world today. Certainly, I believe that the Russians, you defect from the Soviet Union, they're still going to kill you. The communists are still in power in Russia. Nothing has changed other than the perception of the American people. And if you really believe what you're told by the media, that we defeated communism, let me ask you a question. If we defeated communism, why are there 1.25 billion people living under communism in China today? And of course, why is North Korea a Chinese communist nation, and Vietnam a communist nation, and Cuba a communist nation, and Rhodesia and Southwest Africa? They're all communist nations. Communists are in control in Angola today. But you see, they've changed our perception. A lie told often enough is still a lie, no matter how many people believe it. And they've given us this idea that we defeated communism. No, we are adopting the communist programs right here at home as we move from a free society to one where all power is centralized in our federal government. New legislation, the John Warner National Defense Appropriations Act and the Military Commissions Act, lay the groundwork for the establishment of an authoritarian society in America. And, of course, as you know, they've given Halliburton $385 million to build detention camps here. And if you doubt that, you can go up on the Internet and Google it, Halliburton, $385 million. And then, of course, detention camps, you'll find it's true. America's in real trouble today, and you need to help us get the truth out. But before you can be effective in this battle, you need to find out what we believe in. That's why the founding documents that we have, I mean, all of the founding documents, 50 of them in a bound volume put together by our good friend, Pastor Chuck Baldwin. You need to have the founding documents of America. They're available from Radio Liberty. You have to know what you believe in before you can know how to oppose your enemy. And then, of course, you need to understand the idea of the spiritual forces that are aligned against freedom. You need to see the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, that takes you into the secret societies that were here at the time America was founded. You need, of course, to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get Ted Flynn's book, The Hope of the Wicked. You need to even get Jim Marr's book, of course, going into the secret government that runs America. And then, of course, let me suggest some of the other videos we have, videos at VHS, like They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, we've already mentioned The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. I think that Michael Kaufman's recent production, it's titled World Events and Prophecy. It's got a lot of great information in there and some great clips from Lou Dobbs and others. Understand that our boys are fighting overseas in the Middle East, but that's not where the battle is. The battle is here in America. What's going on in the Middle East is simply a diversion, perhaps leading us into World War III, but the real battle for freedom is fought at home here. Because we could face anyone in the world if we were united as a nation behind the concepts of freedom. But our leaders don't believe in freedom, and they don't believe in America. They're dedicated, right at the present time, to uniting Mexico and the United States and Canada. You need to get our material, certainly our new 4-tape set on immigration. You could just simply call it and ask for the 4-tape set on immigration that has Dr. Jerome Corsi on it. You need to get all of our material on immigration that we have. Certainly you need to get Dr. Corsi's book, The Minutemen, which goes into this in great detail. The Minutemen, you need to get the DVD put out by Glenn Spencer, The Conquest of Aztlan. There was a planned program to take over America and turn it into a Mexican nation, at least the 5 western states, including California, New Mexico, and Colorado. These are not imaginary things. They're very real. But behind that are powerful spiritual forces that energize this. Please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.